welcome to China Money Podcast, your weekly dose of local knowledge on investing in China. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. If you're listening for the first time, China Money Podcast is a weekly new media program aimed at international institutional investors and investment professionals in Asia with a focus on investing in China. Every week, I talk to your China-based fund managers and industry experts, analysts, or economists. We discuss strategies, industries, opportunities, and challenges. To get our program, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, go to our website at chinamoneypodcast.com and sign up to our newsletters. You can also like our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at chinamoneypod. If you like our program and like to support us, it's simple, only takes a few minutes. Just go to chinamoneypodcast.com and click on our sponsors' ads. Register and use their great services. It will be such a great help to us, and thank you so much. Our guest today is Derek Sauger, co-founder of Lunar Capital, a control-oriented private equity firm focused on middle-market consumer companies in China with a headquarters in Shanghai. Before co-founding Lunar Capital, Derek Sauger started several successful businesses in China after moving to Shanghai in 1999, including LinkTiong that became listed on NASDAQ in 2004. He started his career with Goldman Sachs in New York and London. We talked about why he likes to take controlling stakes in the companies that he invests, how he manages to return capital to limited partners at a satisfactory rate, and also the reasons behind his passion for baby apparels. But before we go to the interview, as usual, let's quickly go through the biggest news from the past week. On the economic front, not much big movements this past week. Japanese bank Nomura says its China leading indicator fell in November, but it's expecting it to pick up in December. The most important event during the past week was China's Central Economic Work Conference over last weekend. Goldman Sachs Galhua issued a report trying to read the tea leaves and find the conference to set a slightly more positive tone than expected. What I find the most interesting from the past week were some data from Thomson Reuters. This reflected trends that are obvious for a long time, but it's still interesting to put numbers onto them. For instance, IPOs of Chinese companies worldwide raised $20.3 billion, that's down 62%. In the U.S., only two Chinese companies, VIP Shop and YY Inc., were listed on New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ this year, raising only $170 million, that's down 93% compared to last year. For those $20.3 billion, Chinese companies were able to raise anywhere in the world, 70% or $14.4 billion were raised domestically on the A-share market. But looking at A-share market IPOs, it's also down 65% compared to last year. Another obvious trend is the focus on trade sales, and we see that reflected in the numbers as well. Private equity-backed M&A was $10.5 billion this year, up 53% compared to 2011. Sectors that have seen significant growth include media, entertainment, and financials. And now let's go to the interview with Derek Sauger. I was in New York, and Derek Sauger talked with me on the phone from Los Angeles. This is our last podcast for this year in 2012. We want to thank all of you for your support for this past year and wish you a happy holiday and happy new year. And we'll see you again in 2013. And here is the interview with Derek Sauger. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, Derek. Welcome.
Hi.
Can you first give us a brief introduction of Lunar Capital?
Sure. Lunar Capital is a private equity firm. We're headquartered in Shanghai, and we have about 30 professionals located primarily in Shanghai and Chengdu, with also an office in Hong Kong. Our focus is on middle-market private enterprises that are in the consumer sector, where we can generally take a large equity stake, or ideally a majority controlling equity stake, and use our experience as entrepreneurs and as managers of businesses to try to intensively add operational value to the company. So we like to focus on quite simple businesses, things primarily that people eat and drink and wear that are very consumer focused and really fit our understanding and our experience in running businesses in China.
When I was doing research about your firm, I found Lunar Capital is unusual in almost every aspect compared to what a typical Chinese private equity funds would look like. We'll get to each of those aspects one by one, but let's first talk about your exit strategy. Last year in 2011, you've completed two exits through trade sale, meaning selling to a strategic buyer. Since the IPO market essentially closed for Chinese companies overseas, private equity firms in China have been desperately searching for alternative exits such as trade sale or secondaries. And this year, in 2012, we've seen that private equity-backed M&A have increased 53%. Tell us, why did you initially not focus on IPO exits?
We like the idea of building good businesses. And we define good businesses as companies that are profitable, growing, you know, where there's real value, value to shareholders, and also value to future shareholders. And whether that future shareholder is an individual who buys a share of one of our companies on the public market, or whether the future shareholder is a strategic acquirer, we want to build something that they see value in. We've always been relatively indifferent between IPO exits and trade sale exits. I think it's a great thing for China that an M&A culture is evolving, because that means we can be on both sides. We did exit two companies through strategic acquisitions in 2011, but we acquired a majority in two companies in 2012, and we're in the process of acquiring majorities in a few more, which, with any luck, will close before the end of 2012, although time's running out a little bit, so hopefully by early next year.
So what are some advice and lessons that you can share about selling to a Chinese strategic buyer?
Yeah, I think people have to just use common sense. And that means focus on margins, focus on profit, and focus on sensible growth that's sustainable. I think sometimes in China, there's too much emphasis on the story. Yet secondly, I think when it comes to growth in China, often people buy into these really outstanding growth rates, but they never ask themselves the question, are these growth rates sustainable? So I personally would much rather invest in a company with a lower rate of growth that I think is sustainable for 10 years than a higher rate of growth that may only be sustainable for 1 or 2 years. I am an enormous believer in the compound effect of slow growth. And in China, when you're talking about slow growth, you still might be talking about 15 or 20% a year, which compounded over several years is, you know, a phenomenal opportunity.
One of the important factors when you sell a business is, of course, valuations. How do you handle the process of coming to a balanced and agreed valuation, not only because the buyer and seller's valuation expectations have a huge gap, and also it tends to be more difficult and complicated to value a company in China?
In our case, the valuation process for our businesses has not actually been that complicated, because most of them have been just profitable businesses in sectors that are well understood. So, for example, last year we sold a beverage business. There are comparables to this beverage business that have been publicly listed. There are comparables to this business that have been acquired by other large multinationals internationally, and also some of the large conglomerates domestically. So when companies have profit in China, I think they're generally fairly straightforward to value. I think where you get into the situation of having irrational expectations is really when you're dealing with businesses that are maybe more valued on metrics than profitability, or maybe when they're in newer industries, because those businesses are inherently much more difficult to value. And an entrepreneur may always think a business like that is worth many, many, many millions of dollars, whereas the fact is there may just not be a community of potential acquirers who have an ability to value that business, or who simply want to pay a premium.
I think your original plan for 2011 was actually to complete 3 exits, but only 2 were completed. Is that right?
There is one other exit, yes, that we're still working on, which we're hoping to close by the end of this year, but we're running out of time.
Is that also a reflection of the bigger economic picture and also just the general difficulties in this past year? Or is it something specific relating to this particular company?
I would say it's more specific to the way that China M&A is evolving. With this next sale we're working on, there's been a lot of interest in buying this business. But it's come from both multinationals looking to enter into the Chinese market and from large state-owned conglomerates. For a lot of these large state-owned conglomerates, that often can be a little tougher. They may move a little slower. They may have more internal process.
With slower pace of exits, of course, it impacts your own bottom line, which means that it's going to put pressure on your own returns and also pressure from limited partners to return money. How are you handling pressures from LPs to return capital?
All of our funds currently, and from any of the surveys we've seen, rank quite highly on money we've returned to limited partners. And a lot of that is because since we have a substantial amount of control over a lot of our portfolio companies, we're often able to generate returns through things like partial exit or also through dividending out earnings. Most, if not all, of our companies are profitable. And if we're the majority shareholder, it's a lot easier to do that than if you're a minority investor working with an entrepreneur who may have no desire or no interest in returning profits to shareholders.
I'm sorry, how significant is returning some of the profit in the dividend format to LPs?
In our case, it's been fairly material. It's not the kind of distributions that are going to return the entire fund, but if you have businesses that are operating at 20% plus margins, you can often move the needle quite substantially. All of a sudden, you just decide, you know what, we've built up good cash over 2 years, and we have a good ability to return a big chunk of the equity that was put into the business, or maybe redeem some of the debt that we might have taken on from the business. When I look at the recent vintages in private equity, one of the challenges that limited partners have had is that most Chinese private equity firms, even those that have had exit, have struggled to return capital to limited partners. It's a combination of factors. One is the IPO window being closed. The second one is that companies that have gotten public have tended to be very illiquid. So it's very hard for private equity firms to sell shares.
How about for returns? If you're going to take longer time to exit your investments, your returns will also be lowered. What's your outlook for returns for the future, for Luna Capital?
I think there's a high correlation. If your businesses are profitable, you're able to distribute those profits. Chances are the companies are pretty healthy. Long term, your returns are going to be just fine. So I feel pretty good about the returns on our portfolios right now. Some people often forget that generating a 30% IRR over 2 years is far less interesting than generating a 20% IRR over 10 years. One of the problems if you exit a business too soon is you still have to be invested. What are you going to buy? So we really prefer the idea of being invested for longer time horizons. When I look at our businesses, as long as I think the business remains profitable, as long as our entry price made sense, and as long as the company is still doing well, generally speaking, I'd rather still stay invested. Because I look at some of the companies that we own now and at the prices we own them, I think, look, if we exit those companies, it's awfully hard to replace them.
Let's get to the next topic of fundraising. You have also, over the years, targeted smaller size funds and raised funds relatively less frequently compared to some peers. Started your first fund in 1999, but that was basically investing founding partners' own capital, and you started taking third-party capital with a second fund of $60 million in 2007, and I believe you're investing your third fund of $150 million. So why were you able to resist the temptation of a larger management fee?
I think for a very simple reason. I really like owning companies, and I really like the idea of helping run businesses. That's a little tough to do in China. You have to be more selective, and you have to be more patient. So I think you're rewarded if you have a little bit less money. So you have to focus slightly on fewer companies. And since your capital is limited, you have to be more choosy. Having less capital, I think it's helped us narrow our focus and to look for things that are more differentiated. We probably have a little bit less pressure to do more deals because we have a smaller fund. We have less money to put to work.
You have plans to raise a fourth fund next year, right?
We're only about half invested in our third fund, so we don't have any definitive plans for it. But But my hope is that when we do decide to do it, it's just the natural evolution of our current investment strategy, that it will probably be other relatively smaller funds that we raise relatively quickly, hopefully predominantly from a lot of the investors that have supported us to date.
Your strategy is control-oriented, and I think currently you have 5 portfolio companies that you're...
Actually, we have 8 actual portfolio companies, and we have 4 transactions that we're currently closing, 2 of which are on behalf of our current portfolio companies. With any luck, with 1 exit, 2 new companies, and 2 bolt-on acquisitions, we'll probably about be around 9 portfolio companies that we're actively managing for the next year. We divide our team into very clear process. We have an investment team, which are on the front lines, obviously, of negotiating investments and vetting new companies and looking for bolt-on acquisitions and things of that sort. And that investment team takes up almost half of our team. The second team we have is our management operations team. That team goes in to each portfolio company and really works almost like a management consultant and specifically works around building management team. The third team we have, we call strategy, legal, and risk. And our SLR group goes in and really helps make sure that from a risk controls and from a legal perspective, to make sure that we have a good grip on issues like, do we own our assets, things like intellectual property. Our fourth team is called diligence monitoring and reporting. That's our team that goes in and builds management reporting systems. So they'll start by doing due diligence in the companies. During the due diligence process, they'll actually build systems that will help us report better, report more real time on the performance of the company. So we're trying to add that value in a very systematic manner. When we see things that have worked well for certain companies, we try to repeat them and implement them across the board.
That's actually tightly connected to your investment strategy, which is control oriented compared to more commonly in China, just providing minority stakes as growth capital. Increasingly, during the past year or so, as I talk to different managers, even though some managers might have a minority stake, they would still try to improve operations of the company. In your experience, does having a control stake make a difference in terms of implementing operational changes?
Yes, absolutely. There's no doubt that as a minority investor, you can definitely play a role and you can definitely have an operational impact on your company. We have some minority investments, and I believe we have a very big operational value add. But more often than not, as a minority investor, you get dragged into operations only once the problem is materialized. So to some extent, it's like being a doctor. Only once they've diagnosed you with cancer and the cancer is metastasized, then they drag you in to operate. And by then, it might be too late. But the beauty of being in a majority situation is you can be far more proactive. Rather than reacting to problems, you are proactively given very clear early warning signals when you might be about to face a challenge, and you can try to reach out and address that challenge in a very early stage.
Now, let's just quickly talk about your portfolio companies. It looks like you are very fond of baby apparel. You have 2 portfolio companies in that sector. Of course, it's reasonable to expect that Chinese people will spend more money on baby clothing. But how do you handle the difficulty of this market so segmented, and also it's very difficult to establish a brand in China, particularly a Chinese brand?
Our strategy was basically to buy established, proven companies. The main baby business we own, which is called Yihu, that business is now the single largest brand of baby wear in China. So one of the deals we're trying to close right now is actually helping our company buy, you know, an established foreign brand that has traditionally sold pretty well in China and we think the market is really opening up for.
Since this is going to be our last episode for this year in 2012, can you share with us your outlook for the industry for next year, 2013, and also your own outlook for Lunar Capital?
Yeah, my outlook for 2013 is that, you know, I certainly foresee that private equity is going to continue to evolve toward a higher degree of specialization and toward a realization that you have to be more operationally involved in the businesses where you invest. Owning a majority of a company, you probably are going to do a little better in trying to achieve those goals. And for Lunar Capital, look, what I tell our team every year is the same as last year. just keep doing what we're doing well. Stay focused, add value, create profit.
Derek, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.